Thanks for tuning in for Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 and 88.5. I'm Mark Purcell. I'm glad to have you along this morning. The latest edition of Cincinnati Magazine is on newsstands now. The October issue cover story is Go! 10 Fall Foodie Road Trips. But also included in the October issue is a story about a grim death in Covington by Associate Managing Editor Amy Brownlee. She's in the studio this morning to talk to me about the story she wrote. Good morning.
Hello.
Let's begin with a little background on this death of Travis White back in 2009. His body was discovered in March, and they, through investigation, found out that he had actually been beaten to death about a week earlier. But it's a story that involves a lot of people, including one 14-year-old girl named Emily Ball, and that was kind of the focus of your story. But what brought you to the story? What was the hook that that captured you and made you want to find out more?
Yeah, there's a whole cavalcade of characters here, and a lot of people were involved. But when I saw on the news, just in the regular sort of daily news reports about what happened, this was back in 2010 when they were kind of following up on some hearings that she had had. And I read that a 14-year-old girl was involved. I thought there has to be a bigger story here. There has to be something else going on. And so I just did a little digging and realized that there was probably a pretty good story to tell about this.
Well, 17-year-old Travis White was the victim of this crime. And you start the story talking about how Emily Ball, the 14-year-old, called Travis to come to her house. He came to her house. She left the house with her little brother because he was being beaten to death inside, Travis White was.
She acknowledged that she knew he was going to get beat up. The prosecutors in this case would say not only did she know, she wanted him to be, and actually she wanted him to be killed. And so that was kind of the line that I kept reading and in the news reports was that a 14-year-old girl orders the murder of her ex-boyfriend and these big salacious headlines. And again, it really wasn't that simple. I think she knew certainly that he was going to be attacked, but whether or not she knew the extent, I really can't say.
And for a 14-year-old, you title the article An Abandoned and Malignant Heart and explain why towards the end of the article. But it really does seem like she was pretty heartless. But you, throughout the course, you see that she's had a difficult upbringing.
Absolutely.
And that while kind of cold-blooded or cold-hearted, she's also a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, and difficult is an understatement. I mean, this girl, even the prosecutors acknowledged, she endured a brutish life. And the title, Abandoned and Malignant Heart, it certainly refers to her, her heart, but it also refers to her situation. I think she was certainly abandoned, not literally, not in the way we think of a child being abandoned, but certainly incrementally. And I think her attorneys would point to the kind of cumulative effect this had on her.
One thing that I was shocked as I read the article about was how some of the folks who should have been taking care of her weren't. The Kentucky Cabinet for Health and Family Services had some experience with Emily and her family, but that I noticed didn't make any comments for your article.
No, refused to comment. Jill Midkiff would force me to kind of call her over and over again and explain over and over again what this was, when of course she knew. I mean, this was a pretty terrible thing that happened under the cabinet's kind of purview. And she would always kind of just say, like, well, what were you talking about again? Oh, yeah, I kind of remember what happened there. When, of course, this was just a horrifying thing for Kenton County. So that was frustrating for me. It was certainly frustrating for Emily's attorneys who needed to access her records to build a case to tell the story of her troubled youth. And the cabinet was no help for them on that.
And it didn't seem like much help with you.
No,
either. Well, Travis was beaten by a couple of fellows who were caught. Let's just say these weren't the smartest.
No, they were not criminal masterminds.
Tools in the shed. He was dumped by some railroad tracks. His body found about a week after the incident. And as you tell us in the article, basically they followed blood and fiber trails right back to the basement where the beating happened.
Yeah, so let me clarify. They didn't actually just follow the trail. They didn't leave a trail of breadcrumbs for the police. But the police found that fiber trail when they kind of raided the house later on. They were led to the home actually by phone records. They looked at Travis's phone and realized that one number had been calling him on the day he went missing, and that all of his friends and family were calling him that whole week he was gone, worried messages and texts and whatnot. But that one number stopped calling because they knew exactly where he was. And so they just kind of on that hunch went straight to that house. And as I say in my story, Detective McGuffey opened the door and he said the smell of blood rushed out of the house and he knew this was where he needed to be.
And it was a horrific death for Travis White because
Absolutely.
He was beaten over a stretch of time and actually dumped in the basement and left to die, basically.
Yes, yeah, and that's one of the more kind of horrifying images for me that I couldn't rid myself of while I was doing this was this idea that he died in the basement in this cold fieldstone basement in this very old house. It's just kind of a dungeon down there. And he was attacked in the room above him, and there was a significant amount of blood, so it kind of trickled through the floor and dripped down around him as he died. It's just horrible. And so that was something that the prosecutor kind of explained to me in my first interview with him. And I just remember being very disturbed by that.
Well, it wasn't Emily Ball who actually did the beating.
No, absolutely not. She wasn't present for it.
But she kind of arranged for it.
Well, that's the big question. You know, I think her attorneys would say that these men had a separate vendetta against Travis White. They had kind of this run-in with him a few weeks earlier, at least one of them did. And so, you know, they live in a small town, and so they had kind of they had run into each other and had a fight or an altercation, I think, in Newport. And so her attorneys would like to say that they were using Emily to get him there and then do what they wanted to do. Obviously, the prosecutor wants to tell the story that Emily, just in some moment of, I don't know, woman scorned, decided to have this boy killed or have him hurt, beaten. We'll never really know what happened, but we do know that she left and didn't seek help. And that's kind of the indifference that I point to, that there's this moment where she could have made the right call. She could have done the right thing, and she didn't.
And she walked by a
police
station.
She walked by a police station twice. Yeah, the Covington PD, and didn't reach out. And, you know, we can give all kinds of reasons from why she might not have done that. And not all of them add up to her being evil. So,
well, you also talk about her court-appointed attorneys and how they have obviously become personally involved in the case. What about you? As you were researching and writing this, did your image, your thoughts about Emily Ball change?
I exited my reporting process more ambivalent than I entered it. I had a few details going in to kind of my first interview, and I remember thinking, like, yeah, she probably should go to jail for this. She probably deserves that. I feel that I've landed somewhere in the middle now. I think she, you know, maybe it's time for us to start doing right by her. I think she would be much better suited to a mental health program that would address some of the issues that she's had in her lifetime, but that's also punitive, because I do believe in my heart that she should be punished for what she did. She was involved in a horrible crime, and a boy is dead. You know, he'll never have the chance to make his life better, and she really will. Even if she goes to prison for 15 years, she'll still have a chance to make her life better, and Travis won't.
And there is a resentencing hearing that's coming up?
Right. She was a minor when this happened, obviously, so in Kentucky, she's entitled to a resentencing, and it's basically just the delayed sentencing. So the judge will have an opportunity to look at the case. The terms of her conviction won't change, but she's currently sentenced to 15 years in state prison. He'll have a chance to look at that and her current situation and her progress at Moorhead, the facility where she's currently incarcerated, and say whether or not she should go to prison and go ahead and fill out that sentence, or if she's free, send her back to Covington, or, you know, I suppose he can just kind of cobble together his own sentence based on what he thinks is right.
Well, very eye-opening story, and had me shaking my head and becoming ambivalent as well after I read it. So,
yes.
Well, thanks for sharing the story.
Thank you so much.
Amy Brownlee, Associate Managing Editor at Cincinnati Magazine, her feature story, An Abandoned and Malignant Heart, The Sad Life of Emily Ball and the Death of Travis White, is in the October issue, which is on newsstands now. You can find a link to the Cincinnati Magazine website at our website, wvxu.org.